Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Millionaire Dentist Podcast, brought to you by Four Quadrants Advisory. On this podcast, we break down the world of dentistry finances and business practices to help you become the millionaire dentist you deserve to be. Please be advised, we do speak with an honest tongue and may not be safe for work.
Hello and welcome. This is Casey Hires back at the Millionaire Dentist Podcast in studio with co-host Jared Bridgman.
Hey, good afternoon.
It's not just us today, pal. We've got a special guest.
I know. I'm really excited.
Dr. David Rice is joining us. David is the founder of the nation's largest student and new dentist community, Ignite DDS. He travels, he speaks, he writes, and he's really pouring into the dental industry, especially with young dentists. And this is what I love. He maintains a restorative and implant practice in East Amherst, New York. So 25 years experience is a pretty good foundation to pour into some young folks. David, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
So I'm very curious about a whole bunch of things, but let's start with this. You went to dental school. Were you an associate for a little bit?
I did. I went to dental school. I did a residency right out of school. And then I had a massive failure of an associateship and then kind of a so-so associateship before I found a great one. And then the practice that I ended up buying.
How many years were you an associate?
About 2.5 years.
Okay. And then you said, hey, it's time to buy a practice. And boom, you looked up and had that bonus job of practice ownership.
You know what? It's been the best decision I've ever made.
Nice. That's good. There's a variety of topics I want to cover today. But talk about the journey from you're a practice owning dentist, restorative and implant practice, which tells me that you love dentistry. You sharpen your skills. You're learning how to do different procedures and really serve your patients well. Talk to me about the origin and the inspiration to give back, to start Ignite DDS.
Sure. I've always been a teacher at heart. And, you know, from day one, moving back to the Western New York area after my residency, I always taught part-time at Buffalo's Dental School. And for me, it was a means of, one, giving back, and two, quite honestly, of getting better myself. It forced me to think about things that lots of times maybe more seasoned dentists get on autopilot. You know, we pick up the same handpiece and the same birds do the same thing. So I figured out early on that it was as much a win for bettering myself as it was for bettering the next generation. And, you know, short story is after doing that for a bunch of years, I thought it'd be really cool to teach all over the United States and North America. And then, you know, my then associate had some big things happen in life that were, you know, kind of shocking and unfortunate and unavoidable. And I had to leave teaching the dental school for a little while and I missed it. And between missing it and wanting control over how I taught, where I taught, you know, that was sort of the impetus for Ignite.
Buffalo, are you a Bills fan? Were you a Bills fan? And have you finally gotten past those three Super Bowls in the 90s?
So I will tell you, you know, you could take the boy out of Buffalo, but I'm still a Bills fan at heart. It was 4 years in a row we lost. So I'm going to add one on top of your three.
I was cooking the books for you.
No, you were, you know, and cooking them in a good way. I will tell you this, though. Our very first full year in St. Petersburg, Florida, a guy named Tom Brady got to be the Tampa Bay Bucks quarterback, and we won the Super Bowl. So it just washed all the badness.
Well, I certainly just heard you say we won the Super Bowl. Good man.
wherever my feet are, that's a victory.
Hey, geography is an acceptable origin story for fandom in my book. Well, you know, going back to education, I mean, I see that you've completed curriculums at Speer, Pankey, Dawson, and my favorite, the School of Hard Knocks. But it sounds like education, learning, and then teaching has just always been a part of you. How do you balance out that itch within the dentistry that you enjoy? That's the sort of the cornerstone of your success.
Sure. So it's, you know, it's been an evolution for me. In the beginning, I was almost all clinical care with patients with a little bit of teaching. And then over the course of time, it went from, 90%, 10 to 80, 20, 70, 30, 50, 50. And today I fly back from St. Pete, Florida to East Amherst, New York, and I see patients every other month for a week. So I am about 95% education, Ignite DDS mentorship, and 5% clinical practice. But that 5% is really important because I need to stay on top of technology and materials and working with team, or, everything I teach is irrelevant.
Well, it speaks to credibility, right? It's you're doing and teaching, which is really good. So it looks like top young dentists, that's kind of the focus. From your perspective, as you're mentoring and speaking with and interacting with these folks, what are a couple of the common questions or struggles that they share with you or that you are encountering?
Sure. I would say the number one, and this one is number one by a landslide, is their debt. So students are rolling out of school today, I'm going to say almost minimum 300,000, with a big chunk of them rolling out, mid fours to mid 500,000. 550 in debt, and it's impacting their choices. Some of that is reality. Obviously some of them have limited options because of that debt and their family structure and geography. And for a lot of others, it's really perception. So a lot of what we work with when we're talking with young folks is, what really is an obstacle? What feels like an obstacle? And then either way, how do we show them objective pathways to success so they can overcome?
Debt is emotional and it's tough. We have some folks we work with, long story short, in the state of Florida, but when both of them are dentists, and when you add up the student loans, practice loans, equipment loans, it was a daunting number, to the point where they would inquire with the Florida, the Florida Dental Association from the state perspective, and just making an inquiry, and they're like, yeah, we don't really have anything for you. And that can really just freeze people up. It's incredibly stressful. Now, it's real, but is some of it the boogeyman? You made a statement earlier where some of it is perceived and some is real, but some of it is just what they feel. Probably convoluted with that question, but when it comes to debt, what advice do you give young people?
Yeah, I will tell you, and this has been my experience for the last, 28 years or so, is your fastest path to debt elimination is owning some kind of business. And heck, you went to dental school, so it could be a good idea to own a dental practice. And with that, this is my biggest mistake. I did it the wrong way, which is why I really share what I share today. Pay minimum payments, get cash flush, be attractive to lenders so you can own a dental practice as quickly as possible, and then pound your debt down.
I like that. So the opposite of what Dave Ramsey's book's about.
100% the opposite of what Dave Ramsey speaks about.
And I'm
about.
With you, because I hear that so often, and I've read his book. I met him. He signed my book. For let's call them commoners or civilians, hey, there's some good strategy there. But for practice owning dentists, who own a 7-digit entity, that just erasing debt and have a singular focus does many dentists a disservice. Sounds like you're of that mind as well.
I am. I'm a living, breathing example. So picture, I'm in my late 20s. I literally in 3 years eliminated my student debt, pounded every penny towards it. I also bought a home. I was also at the time married to a physician, which meant I could make $0 per year and pour every penny back into the practice. Yet despite all of those things, in the eyes of a lender, I was a questionable lender because I didn't have assets that they wanted. A bank doesn't want to take your dental practice from you. They don't want to take your house away from you. That's work. But if you've got, 10% of the value of that practice in the bank, that actually means something. And in today's world, if you check all the boxes, the right lender is never going to even take that 10%. They just need to know it's there. So I did it backwards. So get cash flush, buy a practice, then go buy personal property and pay off your student debt. You know, revolver debt's a totally different thing, right? Like credit card debt, all that stuff. Right. Don't have any of that. Like, don't get Dr. Rightus and go out there and buy a Ferrari and a boat and a 4,500 square foot house. Those are bad decisions and that's bad debt. But your student loan debt, to your point, the boogeyman, it's not bad debt. It's going to make you millions of dollars over the course of your career.
Why do you think so many young dentists are scared to death of it?
The most honest answer, and there'll be some people who don't like this answer, is DSOs spend bank going into school after school after school, framing the story to convince young dentists that they need to be a part of a big group. Now, I'm not opposed to a DSO. And heck, if you don't want to be an owner or you don't want to necessarily settle down geographically right away, then a DSO probably is a really great option for you. But don't believe the story, because the story benefits the storyteller.
Well put.
Yeah.
We like to call ourselves the DSO kryptonite. Again, for some people in some situations, it's a fantastic option. But they're sweeping regions and areas, and you might be able to shed some light on this. I don't want to necessarily, but they are. There's a little bit of fear with the young and the old. Nobody's going to want to buy your practice. Let me dangle this check in front of you and take it. And I don't want to go the direction of trashing DSOs, because, again, there's a place for them and it can help a lot of people. But to the masses, it seems like they have wreaked some havoc in dentistry. Is that an overstatement?
You know, I think what concerns me about the storytell, and it's not just DSOs, right? There's a lot of storytellers who are out there taking advantage of people. So not just them, but the model doesn't bother me. It's when people don't tell 100% of the story. So give everybody all the objective facts and let people make the best choices for them. And there's some, you know, really strong regional DSOs that are dentist owned that do that really, really well. And I'm a fan. You know, I think that's a model that's going to continue to grow. It's going to take over the solo practice model for sure in the next 7 years. But, you know, when VC dollars come into play, then as a dentist, it behooves you to ask great questions and get the right answers in the full story.
Sorry to give you a pop quiz. I do this when I present CE. Do you think it's easier for a practice owner to sell to a younger dentist or to corporate dentistry?
Ooh, it depends. I'm going to say it's going to be based on how solidified their systems they are and how productive they are. I think in today's world, a DSO, big or small, that's worth its salt is looking for a highly productive practice with pretty good systems or excellent systems. So the days are gone for the most part where you haven't done things very well and can sell it to anybody.
Yeah.
However, if you have those things going for you, then you've got a stacked deck and you're in a win-win position to sell to whomever you like.
A plus, brother. Perfectly put. I was in a large group and I got asked that question. It felt a little loaded. And I turned it over to the crowd and I said, would anybody like to take a stab at it? And an older gentleman raised his hand and he said, well, I've just sold to that. I was supposed to stay for X amount of time, didn't make it 6 months. I would, you know, didn't recommend it. But I asked the person why they ask it. And they said, well, I just sold out as well. And I'm just regretting it. And I said, well, to your point of systems, if your practice has 75% overhead and the financials are boom, 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 it's much easier to sell to corporate dentistry. The younger dentist will line up when you have, like you said, systems and processes in place, overhead in the 50s. You can show in financials the income that can be made and all of those things. You're playing with a stacked deck. Well put. And I put you on the spot with that. But that aligns with what we think here as well.
Yeah, I feel like it's a seller's market right now. If you have done a reasonable job over the years, you know, building something to sell.
Yeah, well put. Our goal is simple. We build better dentists. I read that on the website. General question, but get into that a little bit for me. What are some pillars that help build better dentists and you know, the mentorship and just the knowledge and experience for sure, but dive into that a little bit for me.
Absolutely. So I think when I first started dentistry, all I had to be was a pretty darn good dentist and a kind of a normal human. Today, you need to have strong clinical skills, you need to have strong leadership skills, and you need to have strong business skills. So those three pillars are where we focus when we work with young dentists, and we drive them to educate themselves in those three main lanes every single day.
Clinical leadership and business. What, love that. Yeah. What do you think prevents some practice owners from not excelling in those areas over the course of a career?
First one, you know, probably fear. I think it's the same fear when you come out of school, but it's fear of failure. So boy, it's going to take time and money for me to invest and get better in one, two, or all three lanes. And what if I invest and it doesn't pan out? Now I'm in trouble. So fear is a big one. This one, some of you are listening are not going to like, but it's the truth. Laziness. You're lazy. If you want better, you have to be better. And I think as humans, we like the path of least resistance, but nobody who's ever made it in the world took the path of least resistance unless they inherited it from mom and dad. So those are the two biggies for me.
Well, those folks typically have another set of hurdles to overcome, but yeah. Well,
it's a true story.
Well put. I want to dig in a little more to understand, on the Ignite DDS, you know, we've got the online academy, the continuing education, the study club, the fast track, and the mentorship. Would you just kind of touch on those a little bit?
Sure. So, you know, the online academy we built for one reason. I'm a raving fan of Panky, Dawson, Coyce, and Spear. I think they provide incredible clinical education for people. What we've experienced over the last decade of Ignite is there are a lot of young dentists who can't write that check yet. So we wanted to build a space that bridged the gap where we could bring in faculty from all of those places, as well as faculty from some other strong institutions, and say, hey, if you're not ready for the 301 and the 401 lesson, let's make sure you own the 101 and the 201. And we can do that at a price point that is easy for you. And then the other side of it was, you know, we know our young dentists and our students today, they want to learn on their own timetable. So to build an on-demand place that's very Netflix in nature, I mean, a course might be an hour, 2 hours, or three, but it's very much moduled in 5 to 15 minute increments and fully automated. So if you want to come and watch 5 minutes and come back and watch 10 and come back and watch 20, and it takes you, you know, a week to finish the course, no big deal. It drops you right back in just like Netflix or Prime would. Automate your quiz, automate your CE, easy peasy, fully interactive back and forth, which I also love. So people can, you know, kind of anonymously ask all the questions that they want without ever feeling like I'm going to ask something somebody thinks I should already know, and therefore I'm not going to ask it. So I love that for us and for young docs and even for a, you know, top 10% student who says, hey, I want to get ahead of the curve. The study club piece sort of levels that up. And we have them both for young dentists as well as for dental students. And they are largely virtual. They're run on a national basis. We, by design, do not put dentists in the same club who live in the same city. Because what I've learned when I was in that room is people don't always tell all the goodness that they could to help their fellow dentists because they're worried it might help their practice, right? I mean, you want to believe we're all totally altruistic. It's just not the case. So we've got one mentor with maximum 15 dentists who are from all over the country, and everybody's willing to share because they might live 1,500 miles from each other. So everybody succeeds together as opposed to one person's success feeling like it could negatively impact yours. And, you know, those two pieces have been awesome for us to see young dentists just accelerate. And then, you know, when they're ready 2, 3, 5, 6 years later, and they say, well, where should I go next? I'm like, go to Panky, Dawson, Spear, Coyce, go get that clinical education. And on the business side, same, you know, similar pillar. On the leadership side, similar pillar. And we connect them to the right people when they're ready.
Love that. Yeah, it's less threatening if the if they don't view them as your competition across the street or down the road. And then I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's a very real thing within the local study clubs, which there's value in, but people certainly hold their cards a little close to their chest in those meetings sometimes.
Yeah, and you know, and I think it's foolish for us to say we're not in competition with each other. Yes, you are. Of course you are. It doesn't mean it has to be. It doesn't mean we can't be friends. But absolutely, if your business is going to win and you're next door to me and that means mine's going to lose, I'm going to make sure I'm winning. So it's silly for us to pretend that that doesn't happen in life.
Right. Switching gears a little bit, many of our listeners, they own a practice, but just hearing your focus, what are younger dentists who maybe are associates or want to be associates or looking for associateships, as an older practice owner, maybe wanting to bring on the right associate, from your perspective, what are they looking for? What could separate a practice owner who's maybe, you know, got up to $1.6 million, $2 million, wants that associate? What are they looking for?
A few things. They are, I'm going to say, first and foremost, looking for a practice that can actually supply them with a healthy patient schedule. You know, not to be overburdened, but that there are enough patients there, there's enough opportunity for growth that they can support themselves and pay those loans down. That's like a safety and a security and a, hey, what I've gone to school for my whole life. So I really want that. The second element that's really, really important and is a major differentiator is if you can do number one and then you can throw in some mentorship, you're almost unstoppable, because everybody claims that they want to be a mentor, but there are very few practices that actually sit down on a regular basis with their associates and say, hey, how's it going? What's going well? Where can I help? Let's look at some of your patients. Let me show you some of mine. People who are really willing to teach them the clinical, the leadership, and the business. And hey, if you're an owner and you're not strong in two of those three categories, then focus on the one you've got strength in. And maybe this is a really cool opportunity to learn another one of those lanes, a second lane, with somebody younger. So you'll learn it faster and they'll feel really good about learning something with you in addition to learning it from you. So those are the two biggest things. And I think if there's a third, it's just maybe the comprehension that there are really, really talented and hardworking young dentists out there. So if you're not finding them, please reach out to me. We don't broker. We just like connecting great people together. And, you know, I always kind of liken this to when you're younger and you go to like that high school dance and, you know, you're afraid to ask somebody because you think they're going to say no, and they're afraid you're not going to ask. So that's where we are in dentistry right now. There's seasoned dentists who feel there's no young dentists who really can fit the bill. And there's young dentists saying, there's no seasoned dentists who want me. So I think those are the three biggies.
That first one kind of resonated, you know, having enough patients and enough production. I know we see it all the time where practice owners want an associate way too early. Or when the timing, the patients, the production, and the overhead do not equal, you need one. But they want to go on vacation and know there's production going on. And sometimes that singular emotion gets them to bring them on too soon. And, you know, it varies. But for us, we feel like, listen, if you're not at 1.3, 1.4 in collections, like you're not really even the ballpark to look at it. What are your thoughts on that?
I entirely agree. I think like most things and like most people in life, you know, we do it for all the right reasons, but we make emotional choices instead of logical choices. And then, you know, we rationalize them afterwards because of that vacation. So yeah, I would agree. If you're not over 1.2, 1.3, you're probably not ready unless you're seeking to cut your time in half and bring somebody in who is going to be an associate to a partner / an owner ASAP.
Yeah. That message needs to be out there more. I'm surprised sometimes at successful dentists and seemingly sharp people that, you know, they get $1 million and they just think it's time for an associate and it can wreck them. It can set them back 5 years. But that's not talked about much. And there's so many variables that go into it. But I appreciated you saying that. Number one is there enough enough food for everybody. And for some reason, that's not looked at enough. David, anything, anything else from your perspective and through your lens of practicing dentist in New York to, you know, business owner in the dental industry, just overall, I want to open the floor up to you to kind of give us a parting shot.
You know, I think overall, aside from what we shared already, the number one quality I see in the most successful dentists I've ever met is vulnerability. You know, whether that is the admission that my practice is doing pretty good, but I'd like it to be doing a whole lot better, instead of kind of staying in those four glass walls, get out there. Ask the right questions, of course, ask them of the right people, but being vulnerable with your team. Don't, you know, we don't need to know everything. We're not supposed to know everything. And I've learned over the years that, you know, the best teams from a culture standpoint, as well as from a productivity standpoint, are the teams where, you know, the dentist owner might come in and say like, hey, here's a concept. Let's talk about it. I've been stunned in such a good way at all the teams I've come in contact with over the years, whether it's been one of my practices or a practice I've gone into to kind of coach for a short period of time. You know, we get so much smarter when we start engaging everybody at the table instead of believing that we're supposed to have all the answers. So I would just encourage everyone who's listening to get vulnerable. And not only will you benefit from it, this giant weight will be lifted from your shoulders. And then the third win in it, all of it, is you're going to like happiness, the whole happiness, like you make all the money in the world, but if you're not happy. So the happiness factor and realizing like this just is something somebody taught me this when I was a kid, and it's totally unnecessary to try to know it all.
Well, you hit on some real good pearls there, and you know, we all want to be successful and have financial freedom, but there's a lot of people with a lot of money who don't have that third thing that you mentioned, which is happiness and that vulnerability. A lot, you know, as a practice owner, asking your team and staff to weigh in and genuinely wanting to hear from them versus like a gotcha kind of question, boy, that can really help a culture tremendously.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, you look at what's going on today, biggest problem in dentistry today for the last 2 years and probably for the next two is team turnover. It's expensive. It's stressful. You can eliminate that in a heartbeat.
Well, and you just hit the ingredients to eliminate it. It's interesting. Pre-COVID, we would hear people complain about team or staff. Now it's a little more real because, you know, there's some harder times getting the right people, but you just hit the ingredients on how to overcome that. And you said something else really interesting, quote unquote, pretty good. There's a lot of practice owners out there that they settle and they're okay with, I'll be all right. I'm doing pretty good. And to me, that's like nails on a chalkboard, right? To be pretty good. To your point, clinical leadership and business, there's areas to grow. Which one can you use help with? And then seek out those resources. You've done that over your career. And you know, the fruits of your labor show that.
Yeah, thank you. You know, I've always been a fan of be the least intelligent person at every table you sit at and just learn. You know, it wasn't that hard for me, of course, but you know, you sit at some really cool tables and meet some interesting people and you leapfrog all the other folks who are, you know, pretending to have all the answers. And I totally understand that because I was that guy as a young dentist and I needed to sit at a few tables and realize that, you know, people want to help. Good people really do want to help.
Well, and having that self-awareness, having the confidence in yourself to be vulnerable, those are important skills. And Dr. David Rice, thank you so much. Jared, where can our listeners learn more?
IgniteDDS.com. That's a good place to start. David, if they're looking to sign up, can they just go on anytime and sign up and not have to worry about a semester start or anything like that?
Absolutely, at any time. And if anyone has any questions at all, please feel free just to reach out and connect directly to me. This is my favorite thing to do in life, and I'm really happy to help.
And I liked what you said about not being the smartest person at the table, because that's how I live my life. So that's good to know. Well, thank you, David. Once again, I really appreciate you being on here. And again, folks, check out ignitedds.com and start learning.
That's all the time we have today. Thank you to our guests for their insight and for sharing some really great information. And thank you to you, the listener, for tuning in. The Millionaire Dentist Podcast is brought to you by Four Quadrants Advisory. To see if they might be a good fit for you and your practice, go on over to fourquadrantsadvisory.com and see why year after year, they retain over 95% of their clients. Thank you again for joining us, and we'll see you next time.